and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And it's been a week for you, but it's been a trip to the bathroom for him.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Crazy Rider. Are you still doing okay tonight, Joe?
Yep. I filled up the glass, I emptied the bladder, I'm ready to roll.
All right. So when we left off...
Oh, hang on. Colon cleanse. I'm joking. Let's keep going.
When we left off, we'd gotten to Detective Comics. So we're going to start with Flash number one. Now, well, Flash...
Let's do a recap, just in case people are jumping in on the second part and this is their first podcast. Because as you know, Jim Shooter always said, everybody's comic is somebody's first. So you should have a little brief recap of what we're doing in case somebody didn't bother to record part one.
In our last episode, the Joker was able to get Batman's secret identity.
And the Cesar Romero version.
And he was going to give it on national television while Robin is being eaten by a Venus flytrap.
Meanwhile, Corey's using his telescope to spy on the gorgeous redhead who moved into his trailer park next door. Help partner.
That's Barbara Gordon.
Help partner sent Joseph Ryder a message to his secure web mailbox, of which Joe had no idea he had one.
What we're doing, we're going through the DC 52, and where we have numbers for books, that like Batman and Robin is starting over with a new number one, but we have numbers because there is a Batman and Robin series. Where we have numbers for a previous series, we're going to be using those to help base our order. For books where there is no history, we're flying by the seat of our pants.
And if you want to know some of the theories we're talking about, how we're going to order, we went into depth on it in the last podcast. So really, it would behoove you to maybe download that one first, listen to it, and come back to this one. Besides, the best part about it is they're free for downloading.
And not only that, it would explain what we've been up to a little better than we can right now.
True.
Now, Joe doesn't currently have a shop.
Nope.
And I'm not currently helping with the shop. But when Joe had a shop, I would help with the orders.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Well, there was the one time real early in the shop where you had seven of us in there.
Oh, yeah, it was kind of fun. We'd all come over and basically we'd order pizza and we'd all sit around and talk about it. And it would be kind of getting everybody's input on stuff. I mean, this was back in the heady days when we used to order like 100 copies of Brigade number one.
100 copies of any Image book. Any Image book, 100
except,
copies.
Except the Tales of 1963, I think we went 50 maybe.
Which is sad because that was the only book of Image back then I liked.
And it was always funny because Corey was always anti-Image. Brian Wilson was always anti-anything. I don't recall it. Nick stopped in a few times. This is before he partnered up with the Source. And, you know, Pat was always, I want to get the gold book. We want the gold.
And Pat was, his idea of who a hot artist was.
Hot.
Well, it was Mark Bagley, hot artist.
That was when he was doing his, he did a big run with, it's the first Carnage or the second time? But it was a hot issue for a while. I mean, you're talking now it's like in the quarter box, but back then it was probably ran for about $10.
Yeah, but it didn't have anything to do with Mark Bagley because he went over to New Warriors and nobody cared.
Was that before or after McFarlane? No, that's right. The Image was gone. So this was
it was after McFarlane.
Yeah, this was when he did after his Spider-Man run and they were all trying to get their books out. And, of course, the big thing that kept us rolling was the death of Superman, the stop of all of his books, and the eventual return, I believe, that April.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a round table when everybody was interested. Eventually, it just got to the point where Pat and I got more confident doing it. You know, we actually tracked sales. We tracked the numbers. I talked a little bit last time about the amount of preview catalogs that we would do. That would be basically my Saturday before order date. And this was before now everything can be done online. So I had a spreadsheet that I had whipped up, and eventually we ended up just buying a subscription software program recommended by one of the original owner of Hot Comics. He had a friend down in Florida. Now, is where we had 300 subscribers. He apparently had 1,800 subscribers. He would get his comics and spend most of the day processing them. So you didn't go in and pick up comics the day they were delivered. You came in the following day if you wanted to buy from him. You know, and got, you know, there are some people probably not got to have them now. Can't wait, even though you give me a good discount. I don't know if I'm doing Gruber or a bad
Schwarzenegger.
I got the one to terminate the puppy.
The other thing I remember is one of the caveats I would always say, because Joe would come to me and go, "You ordered this book. Yeah, is it going to be hot?" Half the time I would go, "No, no one will buy this book but me." Or, get five or six.
There were a few times you were wrong, but for the life of me, I can't remember the titles. Where I ordered them despite the fact you said, "No, I don't think anybody here is going to buy it." It could have been Brewhead. No, I don't know.
I remember I was really big on Gloom Cookie, and you were like, "Oh, you're really excited about this book. Maybe I should order 50 of them." And I said, "You're going to be lucky if you sell 10. And you would order it, and it would sell, and there'd always be two or three left on the shelf. I forget, there were some of the others where a lot of Vertigo books. You didn't sell a lot of Vertigo.
No. I mean, when Sandman broke out, we sold a lot of Sandman. And I do remember when Sandman 50 came out, we ordered a crap load of them. Because what we would do, and I forget who I heard this from, if a female would come into the shop,
yep,
I'd always tell, because it was somebody that you could just tell she was just coming along because her boyfriend wanted to go to the shop. Because right away, the first thing the guy would do is grab books, start looking at it. The girlfriend would just kind of look around. And so usually we'd talk to her and just say, "You know, well, do you read comics?" "Well, not really. I'm just here for him." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. I will give you this book," and I'd hand her a copy of Sandman 50. "Read it. And if you like it, make him buy you other copies of it." I don't know if it ever worked, but it seemed to do okay.
We sold a hell of a lot of trades.
And I know, yeah, we sold a lot of trades. I remember we had a whole group of goth that used to come in and buy.
Yep.
Because I remember we teased the one girl because she came in one day and she didn't have her goth makeup on. We're like, "We barely recognized you."
The one I remember most was the Invisibles.
Oh, yes.
And I was huge on the Invisibles. And Joe was like, "Wow, you love this book. And they're doing a special cover for the fifth issue." And I said, "Joe, no one's going to buy it. It's hard to follow. It's complex. It's not superheroes." And you, because they were doing the special multi-cover thing for issue 5, you ordered way too many. And you had stacks of issue 5 in the shop till you closed. That was like 7 years.
Was that the, I wonder if that was the gold, the silver cover, or platinum cover or whatever.
No, they had, they actually had newsprint. They had 5 different newsprint covers. But it was multiple covers because he was doing a joke about the multiple covers being worth more. So he wanted a cover that was, you know, just disposable, throwaway garbage on this really shitty coarse paper. And it wasn't even newsprint when it came out. It was like grocery bag.
I don't remember that. I wish I had a copy of that. Just maybe that might spark my memory. Because I read Invisibles as graphic novels after it was all done.
That was really the only way to read it. I don't know how I made – well, I got very confused reading it as regular comics, but I bought them as regular comics. And then I read it all the way through, and I now have the trades because I read it every couple of years. But there were, you know, there were a few times when I would tell you, "This is going to be a hot book." And I knew the difference. Walking Dead, I remember telling Christy, "You cannot order enough copies of Walking Dead." This was 2003, 2004. "You can't order enough copies of this. This is going to be a hot, hot book." And she was like, "I don't know. It's an Image black and white horror comic. Nobody cares about horror comics." And I said, "No, this, swear to God, trust me on this. This is going to be a hot book." And finally, right before order time, she said, okay. And she was only ordering 20, and she bumped it up to 50. And I remember the first week she sold, you know, to the subscribers 15 copies. And they sat. And she went, oh, my God, you steered me wrong. And I said, nope, this is one. Just wait. And I don't remember when it was, but it was like a couple of them sold. And then the next week they were all gone. And people were coming in asking for it. And they weren't regular comic people. It's one of those books that once the tattoo guys and the biker guys and the horror guys found out about it, they were going to comic shops for it. And when you had the little shop, it was right next to a tattoo parlor.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God, every Friday, at least two people came in from that tattoo parlor, either wanting the book for themselves or wanting it to get a tattoo from.
Yep. Yeah, those guys are cool. I remember one guy would order runs of the McFarlane Dragons because they actually opened it up. They had like a glass showcase with all these open toys that were just incredible.
So we're going through. We had just finished Detective Comics. And if you want to hear how many we ordered of stuff, go back and listen. I mean, geez, people, it's free. It's in iTunes. You just download it. Flash number one. Now, Flash number one does have a variant edition. It's being written by the artist who's never written a comic before in his life.
Mm.
I said we'd order 125 copies. I'm basing this on the fact that Flashpoint, before they said this is going to cause the DC universe to explode, this was DC's lowest selling event of the last 7-8 years. No one cared. I think when this is over, no one will care about Flash. It's weird. They brought Barry Allen back and no one seems to care.
Yeah, there is that. I think the people who care, who are reading it, will read it. I don't know if anybody else knew will. I guess it also depends on what's going to happen with Flash at the end of Flashpoint. Is he just going to be part of the whole Flashpoint universe, or is he actually going to remember anything?
Next book is Frankenstein, Agent of Shade. I ordered heavy on this one. I ordered 75 like I did for Deathstroke. I think this is one where people are going to be interested. The Frankenstein miniseries in Flashpoint is actually selling better than they thought it would. There have been a lot of reorders on it. I think there's some interest in this. I'm interested because I love the Grant Morrison take on Frankenstein from Seven Soldiers. So I went a little higher on this one.
I don't know if I would go as high. Again, if what you said panned out, you know, where the Flashpoint miniseries, I would probably base it off of that. I might, you know, as a comic store too, I might have, in to try to get people into this, you know, last time I talked about, I would work real hard with my subscribers and offer them, try to get them to commit to a pre-order, but I might also do the discount thing where, if a book like this, Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, somebody's really into it, when it comes in, I might just sell it at cost and say, guys, try it for 50% off. I think this book has it, but it might be overshadowed. I might do that with some of the books. Or I might, in November, be half pricing the entire freaking line. But
now, would you have put together a deal where you can order the whole bundle?
I don't know if I would have, because even to the point, I only had one person. I think let me rephrase this. At the beginning of me having the shop, we had the Marvel Zombie. We had the DC Zombie. We had a lot of Image boys. These were mostly younger kids, just came in to check out Image because of the art, and then they go home and check it out. But as time went on, the Image boys dropped out. The DC guys got more picky, and I only ever had one person who ordered one of every Marvel. And he was doing it because he did it all the way back from the 60s and probably always would continue to do it. He didn't buy into the new universe. He didn't buy into the Ultraverse that when Malibu came on board. I would buy the crossovers, you know, when DC Marvel did their crossovers. To this day, he might still be doing that. I haven't run into him ever, although I could email him, I suppose, and find out. So the odds of me doing a try-it-all for bundle, I probably would not have spent my energy doing that because I don't believe nowadays there is such an animal that I am, you know, I buy every single DC. Well, I take that back. There's, again, one person I know that does that. We talked about him, Mr. Jerome Wankalva, who's got, I think, what is he? He's down to like 126, and he'll have one of every DC Comics ever published. And, of course, of those 126, they'll cost him over like $5 million to try to get them all. You know,
well, and some of them he may not ever be able to find because he's also buying the giveaways.
Oh, yeah.
The promotional books they did.
I did a deal with him where I told him I wanted the toy, but I would sell him the comic. So if the toy was like 10 bucks, I'd say you buy the comic for $2, you know, whatever. If the comic was $3, you know, because he wanted the comic. He didn't necessarily want the toy. He didn't care if the toy was in its original packaging. He just wanted the comic. So that kind of fed both of our needs. I got to play with a nifty toy and I got him a discount. But figure, out of 300 plus subscribers, two were what we talked about. One was all Marvel, one was all DC. Everybody else was kind of a mixture of everything. So yeah, I think I'd have spent more time trying to do pre-orders like we talked about in the last podcast, maybe not do a bundle for everybody.
Now, one of the reasons I'm buying the bundle at DCB Service, who did not buy an ad, so I'm not giving them any plugs. Although I really like them. It's, okay, here's this bundle. You know, I can read the first issue of all this stuff because half of it, I don't know the creators. I don't know what they're doing with the stuff. Hopefully they'll be able to say, oh, yeah, and you can add, you know, stuff after you've read them. But this is, because I'm ordering through the mail, I can't go to the shop and leaf through and see what I like. And half of these books, it's like, I don't know what they're doing with it. As a reader, if I didn't have a job that paid as well as it does now, swear to God, Joe, I would cut back to probably like 5 or 6 DCs. I think there are a lot of people, more than anybody would like to admit, who are seeing this as a jumping off point.
I think I did that. I think,
yeah.
Did I actually name the titles I was buying?
I don't remember. Oh. Well, we could get to that at the end.
Yeah. If I even remember.
Yeah. Next book is Fury of Firestorm number 1. I ordered 75. Midline superhero book that nobody seems to care about, but it's drawn by Ethan Van Sciver. So I think it will do better than kind of your average, because your average kind of unknown DC book, I'm ordering about 50 copies of. This one I said 75. I think Ethan Van Sciver and Gail Simone does have a fan following.
True.
Next one is Green Arrow. I ordered 100. And the number next to it on the spreadsheet says why. It's currently selling 58 copies with 58 copies a month in your average shop. And that blows me away because I didn't think that it was doing that well. But obviously Green Arrow is doing well enough that I think a relaunch, I think people would jump on it.
You know, I don't read Green Arrow, so I'm not even sure. Although this would be a place where I might want to jump on because occasionally Green Arrow interests me, but then it disappears. You know, it's like when Mike Grell had it, I was interested, and it kind of waned. And the last thing where he was like hiding in the middle of a forest, in the middle of a city, being Green Arrow, it's like that didn't interest me. So it would be, I think I'd follow you on that one. That would be, you know, anytime you can jump on in a number one like that. Is he still married, or did they get rid of his marriage to?
Yeah, Buffy? That's gone.
Okay.
Which, here's one of the things that bugs me to this day about DC. They've got this strong editorial hand, supposedly. They do this big story about how Green Lantern and Black Canary are finally getting married. Finally. They have this big tie-in issue. They do the storyline through 2 or 3 books, and within a year, it's gone.
Yeah. Although now they could do it all over again. Maybe.
So, next book is Green Lantern number 1. I ordered more of this than I did any other DC except for one. And here's the reason why. Green Lantern number one, your average Batman, if we're going by the baseline that in your average shop, Batman sells 100 copies, the last issue of Green Lantern that came out sold 137 copies. So Green Lantern outsells Batman. They've also had a big status quo change where Hal Jordan is not the Green Lantern that will be in the book. So I said 200. Geoff Johns has really been driving this book. It's kind of been the core of the DC universe for a while. And if it continues like this, it's gonna continue to be DC's biggest selling mainline superhero book. The next one is Green Lantern Corps. I said 175 copies, as many as I did for Batman the Dark Knight. Again, the Green Lantern books have been selling really well. Now, do I think it's going to drop off now that War of the Green Lanterns is done? Maybe. But the Green Lantern books have gone from event to event to event, and they've kept their sales. So I wonder if they've just kind of created a whole Green Lantern fan. And Joe, you can jump in at any time.
Well, of these, I'm only keeping the Green Lantern book, and I'll probably come to regret it, but I'm just going to stick with Jeff and see where he goes.
The other Green Lantern book is Green Lantern New Guardians. Now, there was a New Guardians book in the 80s that didn't do very well. But this one is a little different because it's around the different Green Lantern cores. And I think there's a lot of interest in that. I think people are very interested in those characters. So I think this will sell, I said, 150 copies.
This might be a case where I would go to the Green Lantern subscribers and just say, hey, guys, here are the three books. I mean, I can't pull them automatically for you, but let me know which ones you want. And like I said, I mean, I just stuck with Green Lantern for a long time, and then when the war started or the various events started cranking up, I went back and I go, damn, I should have been picking up Green Lantern Corps the whole time. So who knows, maybe a couple months down the road, I may be going, you know what, I got to go pick these up too.
Now, the next one is a book that I'm quite honestly very, very surprised is on the list here, Grifter number one, one of the Wildstorm characters. They've integrated the Wildstorm universe into the DC universe. I don't know how well it'll do, but I said that it would be kind of a higher line superhero book. I said about 75 copies, although I could be talked down pretty easily.
This is one of the books I actually am going with because I've always liked Grifter as a character. He's always been kind of a loner. And they're making him actually tougher because what he's doing is, and this shows I wasn't paying attention, apparently he can see these certain aliens that nobody else can. So there's been stories like that in the past, like Rom, what was that Roddy Piper movie? They Live.
They Live.
You know, where a normal guy sees these monsters. Well, in the case of Grifter, kills them. What's the rest of the universe see? Well, Grifter's running around killing people randomly. I like that premise. I want to see where they're going to go with it. And who knows, maybe there might be a decent Batman crossover with that coming. I'm Batman. So Grifter I would probably stick with.
Okay, next on the line is Hawk and Dove number one, drawn by Rob Liefeld.
I
ordered 75.
Drop it.
Here's the thing, though. Liefeld, when he comes on a book, the sales do go up. They drop immediately afterward, but there are people who will pick it up just to see.
But 75 is
midline superhero book.
You remember Tim, right, when he used to show up at the cons?
Yeah.
Pick out a Rob Liefeld book, and he would run around and have all the other different creators sign or deface or do whatever into the book. And some of them would get it, you know, they'd have fun and they'd like draw things like, I don't recall breasts looking like this in my grade. And more polite people would just autograph it or do a little sketch, but you could actually, I mean, there were guys who used to have fun. It was always interesting to see what book Tim would come up with. It had to be a Rob Liefeld book that we would come up with to do that. I haven't seen Tim in the last couple cons, so I don't know if he's doing that anymore. I think he kind of graduated to just having, he took a piece of comic book backer board and would just ask the artist or whoever to just sketch on it. You know? That was always kind of a funny thing to do. If I could get a hold of Tim, I'd like to just get those books and scan them in somewhere just so people could see how much fun it was.
Oh, the Captain America number one, the Liefeld Captain America number one, that may have been the funniest comic book I've ever read. And I've read the original Mad Comics. I've read stuff, you know, Milk and Cheese by Dorkin. It was hilarious. It was amazing. Now, will Hawk and Dove number one last? No. Although, let's be honest, Rob's got to be in his 40s now, early 40s. He's, you know, bounced around the industry. If he really wants to make his name again, and it's possible because comic fans will forgive just about anything, if he were to get on this book and stay on it for a year, I think that it would, he would never be a hot artist, but I think that he would be somebody who people would buy his books again, because there are a group of people who like that art style. I don't know who they are.
I don't mind it. I don't go out of my way to look for it, but.
Our next book, I said we'd order 50, you know, low, pretty much 50 is almost the bottom because I think you'll have the curiosity factor. I Vampire, which is probably, this is one where my head just spins because I Vampire was the main story in the last batch of issues of House of Mystery. And it wasn't that good. Even the writer J.M. DeMattia says it wasn't his best work. He's not proud of it. He was learning how to write. But this is DC saying, ah, you know, we got this vampire character. Let's renew the copyright and try and get some Twilight money.
Hmm.
Our next book is the one I ordered the heaviest on. Justice League number one by Geoff Johns and Jim Lee. The current Justice League book, even though people never talk about it, you never hear anything good about the new the current Justice League book. It sells about 85 copies a month. I ordered 200 of the regular and then 50 of the one where you get the free digital download. I think people are going to be buying the combo pack just for the curiosity factor. You know, they get the digital download for an extra buck. You might have some collector people because it is polybagged.
Ooh.
But I think
is this a good point to mention that when I got my copy of Ultimate, the Death of the Ultimate Spider-Man, that I just ripped that sumbitch open and read it?
Yep.
I didn't even go back to buy another one that's polybagged. What had happened was I'd originally asked my comic store to pull them for me. They didn't. But I got there and I just read them on the shelf, and then I just bought the Death one, went home and read it.
Now, I picked up the first part of, I think it's Ultimate Aftermath. I forget what it's called. Because I haven't been buying the Ultimate books as regular comics. I'm buying them as trades. But I went out and I picked up the Ultimate Aftermath. And here's why I don't like buying the Ultimate books by Bendis as $4 comics. I read it in about 2 minutes. It was great. It was beautifully done. I loved it. 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I read that on
the
shelf.
$2 a minute. I could call a 900 number and talk to a hooker for $2 a minute, Joe.
Well, three maybe.
So the combo pack. Now, if you were ordering, how would you order on the combo pack?
I would probably do like you did. I would probably order this one for the long haul where I wouldn't necessarily treat it like action. I might just say, you know, anything that lasts the first month that it looks like I blew it and I overdid it, I might, you know, bring to the con that's coming up. And in case people weren't sure what con I'm talking about the fall con that MCBA puts on in October after, well, you know, right after the whole 52 thing. And again, that's a local oddity, you know. And of course, I was talking about the MCBA Fall Con Comic Book Celebration, October 15, 2011, at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. Go to, I believe it's Midwest Comic Book Celebration.com or something like that to find out more details about it. But anything I figure I overordered on the DC relaunch, I would just figure a way to blow out at FallCon. That'll be interesting too. When we get to FallCon, we're going to have to look around and see just how many people have the DCs there, that, especially in terms of regular retailers and what they're doing with them. Are they blowing them out? Did they sell out, or what's going on? Are they all in the quarter box?
Yeah. Next on the list is Justice League Dark. I said 75, even though most of the dark books and the stuff like that, I don't think it'll last. I think the name Justice League, people will buy it.
Ugh, never last.
I don't think so either. Next one is Justice League International. I ordered 100. And here's the thing. I only ordered 100 because Dan Juergens is a local guy. I think the rest of the world, it'll sell the same as Justice League Dark. I look at it and it's just not interesting. Dan Juergens' last run on the Justice League wasn't that interesting. He has said in interviews that he doesn't much care for doing a Justice League book. Now he's doing a Justice League book.
That same thing. I might just buy it just because Dan's doing it.
Yeah. The next two are the Legion books. Legion Lost is set in the current time, and Legion of Superheroes is set in the future. Legion is currently selling, if Batman sells 100, Legion is selling 42 copies in a shop. I said 75. I think you'll have some people who give it a try because it's a number one. I do think Legion Lost will sell better than Legion of Superheroes. But how many reboots is the Legion going to get? This is, what, the fourth in the past 5-6 years?
Yeah.
I'm a Legion fan. I've been a Legion fan. The Legion Superheroes was the second DC book I picked up. First one was Batman. And then I picked up the Legion thinking it was the Justice League. But it was, oh, wow, these are a bunch of heroes set in the 30th century. And they're a lot like the Imperial Guard in the X-Men. I like this book. And I picked up the first by Levitz and Keith Giffen. So what a great way to get introduced. I am getting tired of the reboots. I swear, if this is another reboot, I'm done.
Screw it. I'm just going to go play Angry Birds.
Yeah, they do this big miniseries, Legion of Three Worlds, to clean up everything. They're not even 2 years into the new run by Paul Levitz, and it's up. We're hitting the reset button again. Next book is one that another one that I can't believe they're doing unless they're doing it for copyright reasons. Men of War, which is set in the current DC universe but has Sergeant Rock in it. feelings exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I might go 10 over the however many pre-ordered. You know, this would be one of those books I would judge solely on pre-orders. I mean, you can't even, you know, the Western one from last time, at least you could kind of judge, well, people buying Jonah Hex will probably want to buy this. But this one, you know, I think, like you said, it could be just a copyright thing. Like, well, you know, let's see if war books are coming back. They had that Captain America movie. That was set during the war, wasn't it?
Yeah, but this isn't set during World War II. It's now. So what is it? Sergeant Rock over in Iraq? I don't know. And here's the other thing. I don't care. There are a lot of these books that I look at and I go, why? Here's the next one. The Justice Society is not getting a book, but Mr. Terrific is getting a book.
Yeah, that one I don't get. I mean, they had a decent run on Justice Society. I set the book down as soon as they decided to start getting greedy and split them off into two. But there's like no reason that they couldn't go back and do it.
Yeah.
Hell, I would be on the phone right now talking to Roy Thomas, telling him, guess what, buddy? We want you to revamp the DC Golden Age. In other words, you know, and there's obviously certain things that they got and that they can't do, you know, dealing with Superman's suit or whatever. But I would just go with it and say, okay, here's your chance. Bring back All-Star Squadron, but we don't I don't know if Roy would do it, because Roy's big on, you know, taking what's existing Silver Age and treating it respectfully and putting new stories into it. I don't know if he'd necessarily want to roughshod and say, okay, no, you can use those same characters, just all new, you know, turn things on their head. You know, you are the Golden Age. Nothing else existed before that. Would he do it? It'd be fun to see him do it. I'd offer it to him.
Yeah. I don't think it'll ever happen, but it'd be nice.
Yeah.
Next book, Nightwing number one. I said 125 copies, Batman book. Nightwing always sold less than the Batman books. It doesn't excite me, but it is putting Dick Grayson back in the Nightwing uniform.
Oh, you said Dick. Seriously, I got this piece of art that's great. It's, let's see if I can find it here. It's Starfire? And she's literally in tears, just crying. I loved you, Dick. I love Dick. Dick, come back. I love Dick. And I'm like, boy, if you slice that baby out of any comic book and just publish it, they're going to come shut your publishing company down. I'll put that sucker online if I can find it. It's just pretty bizarre.
OMAC number one. Now, here's the thing. OMAC number one, I was started to get excited about it when I read about it because, you know, they're going to take the OMAC concept from Infinite Crisis and all of that stuff. Keith Giffen's behind it, and then I saw who was writing it. Dan DiDio, who did the Outsiders book that was so painfully horrid I couldn't make it through an issue. I said 75 copies. I think there are a lot of people who are going to buy it because they're excited about the OMAC concept. I think that by the sixth issue, it'll be selling 10 to 15 copies. Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Oh, I saw them at the fair the other day. There was one of those. Oh, wait. That was like a New Age band, wasn't it?
Believe it or not, Joe, I ordered 125 copies of this because it's Jason Todd and some other characters. I think because it ties in with Batman, there's going to be some interest. It looks horrid. The cover looks bad. But I think there are enough people who are interested to see a Jason Todd comic. And it's a Batman book. I think the Batman books are going to sell better than the regular DC books. Next up is Red Lanterns. I said 125, a little less than the Green Lantern stuff, because it's not a core Green Lantern book, but I do think that this is one that will hold on, because I think the whole Green Lantern franchise does well. Resurrection Man number one. I don't know why the hell they're publishing this.
You know, that was actually a character that I enjoyed the run they did, but that was what, back in the 80s?
That was in the 90s. It was the 90s.
I can't even remember when it happened. But I was kind of like, it was fun when it first came out. I don't know if anybody's going to care.
I don't know if anybody remembers. Let's remember, this book was canceled 15 years ago. No one has used him since.
Yeah.
Joe's furiously typing away.
I'm putting up a picture of Starfire liking Dick.
I said 50 copies. Savage Hawkman number one, yet another Hawkman.
No.
Midline
now,
DC hero.
Now if you throw away all of the past continuity, this book might work.
I liked the Geoff Johns Hawkman, but again, once Geoff Johns left, the book just fell apart. There seems to be, every so often, somebody comes in with a good idea around Hawkman. But once they leave, the book falls apart. For me, it was Tim Truman's Hawk World.
Mm-hmm.
And while he and John Ostrander were working on the book, I liked it. Once Truman kind of pulled back and Ostrander started trying to mix it in with the regular DC universe, fell apart. To the point where they had to use Zero Hour to completely reboot the character. I liked the idea of, you know, he keeps getting reincarnated, and once he and Hawkwoman are together, they die and are reincarnated. And Geoff Johns worked on that, and I thought that story came to a conclusion. They kept going with it. So I'll be interested to see.
There are times where I think DC should just let something go. Like when Jim Robinson did Starman, you know, it was still selling pretty good, but they just, he wrapped it up. He finished it. Garth Ennis did Hitman. He finished it up. I mean, granted, he killed the character, but you know, it's like,
when has that ever stopped him?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, you just because the book's a hit, you get a new creative team, doesn't mean you have to keep it going. You almost would be better off, you know, especially in a case like, I'm thinking like Power Girl. I did read something interesting with all the con coverage is that they said that there is a Karen, what's her name? Karen Starr?
Yeah.
In the DC universe. Not necessarily a Power Girl in the DC universe or Flashverse or whatever the hell we're going to call this new verse coming up.
We're calling it DCNU.
FU?
That's how it feels.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Now, the other thing is, remember after Infinite Crisis, it was, yeah. Nope, this is New Earth. New Earth. What, 5 years after that, and we're New Earth again. Static Shock number 150, which is lower end toward the DC superheroes. I hope it's good. I don't have a lot of faith. Because without Dwayne McDuffie, I don't know as other people will be able to handle the book. Because toward the end of the Milestone stuff, when Dwayne McDuffie had stepped back and the original writers had stepped back, a lot of the Milestone stuff kind of fell apart. Stormwatch number one, yet another Vertigo, yet another Wildstorm book.
But that's
got a tornado.
Wasn't that the one with the Green Manhunter, Martian Manhunter's in it.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
See, now that's the twist that got me to buy this. Because I was kind of curious to see.
Did you think I ordered low?
Hang on a second. I was playing Castle Age.
I said 50.
I might have bumped that up a bit.
Okay.
Just because I think of all the books that they're trying to shoehorn in, they're trying to shoehorn the hardcore universe in. They're trying to shoehorn the Wildstorm universe in. This one, because they actually tie it into a couple things. First of all, they mentioned the Bleed, which is the big thing in between the multiverse. From Authority, they mentioned Apollo and I can't think of his lover's name.
Midnighter.
Assuming they are still a couple. And Apollo is basically a Superman grade person. Again, it was.
He's Superman. Come on. He's Superman and Midnighter is Batman.
Well, yeah, but they also had Mr. Majestic, which is nowhere to be seen yet. He was closer to Superman, I think, than Apollo was. But they're kind of like taking Authority, Stormwatch, and throwing in Martian Manhunter. And it intrigues me to see where they're going to go with it. You know, will it last? Stormwatch was a pretty big seller when it was in Wildstorm until they rebooted it 36 times and killed it.
Well, a lot of it was because, well, Stormwatch got big because Warren Ellis was writing it. It got big enough that they said, okay, we're going to change it to the Authority. And the Authority did well when you had Warren Ellis and then Mark Miller. And then after they left and they ended the book, no one's been able to get the concept to sell.
And that's
one other thing I want to bring up.
Do it.
One other thing I want to bring up. This isn't the first time DC has hit the reset button on a universe.
Well, at least not since you and I have been collecting.
No. Wildstorm. They did a Wildstorm reboot about 3-4 years ago. Look how well that did.
In your quarter boxes near you.
Moving on. Next book, Suicide Squad number one. When they announced it, I was excited. When I saw the creative team, I didn't care. John Ostrander's the only guy who can write this book. Gail Simone wrote a couple. Well, Secret Six was kind of Suicide Squad-ish, but she didn't have the same sort of, she didn't have the same setup. I think Suicide Squad is a book that only one writer could do. 50, you know, down at the lower end. I don't. And the thing is, Suicide Squad was a book that a lot of people very dearly loved. It never sold well. Ever. It never sold well. And again, the last issue of it came out, what, 20 years ago?
Yeah. And of course, the problem is what made the other book interesting was the fact that you had characters that we knew from other books, and there was always a possibility they would die. Well, now it's a new universe. There are new characters. They might be revamps of old characters. I mean, there's always the, you know, I mean, I'll go back to the Captain America movie, which by the time you guys listen to this, I've saw it about a week to 2 weeks ago. You know, there's a scene, I don't know if you want to throw out a spoiler warning, but go ahead if you want. But we're sitting there and you're watching it, and Red Skull picks up what you and I know as the Cosmic Cube, because it's a cube that's glowing with energy. And then he says this has a connection to Odin, which if you watch Thor, it probably does. You know, so it's kind of the same thing, whether it's Amalgam or Age of Apocalypse or God knows whatever else worlds. You're looking, this whole DC thing, you're looking for the familiar and how it's been changed. The problem is Suicide Squad is going to suffer a lot from Deathmate sorry.
From that He's syndrome. He's gonna puke.
From that syndrome, we don't know the characters. We don't know who they are. We don't care if they go out and get killed. You know, it's kind of like DC every time they, in the old universe, they would come out with, well, here's the new Wildcat and here's the new this and here's the new that. And then in the next crossover, they all die because they brought back the old ones and nobody cared about the new ones. You know, to have a Suicide Squad when you don't care if the characters get killed or not. Again, this might be a book that would be better a couple of years down the road when you finally have way too many characters around or whatever. Heck, you could even put the story in there. Okay, well, we got three Blue Beetles. Guess what? We only want one. You guys got to fight to see who gets it to the death.
Now, there's an MMA pay-per-view I'd buy.
Yeah. Hey, that might be the thing. Of course, we've seen that before. Didn't they do a run where, like, some, I think it was a Justice Society, somebody was kidnapping him and forcing them to fight? Some girly.
Oh, there were books like that.
Yeah. So anyways, while Suicide Squad was an interesting concept in an established universe where, yeah, we know these characters, we don't necessarily know these people. Who cares if they get killed or not?
The other thing about Suicide Squad, there was the aspect that these characters might die. But there was also the way that Ostrander built the characters so that you got interested in them even though they were villains. Captain Boomerang, at the time, was my favorite character just because of how Ostrander wrote him. Amanda Waller. No one has written Amanda Waller as well as Ostrander. Ostrander made her forceful, strong, somebody that everybody was scared of. But you also, you know, there was also something underneath where you knew that she wasn't just a hard ass. You know, she had this life outside. And it was just a very rich character that no one's been able to use as well since. I know they're reprinting them, and the problem is they're reprinting them in more expensive books. I think if they would have reprinted Suicide Squad in the big showcases and done two of those to reprint the whole series, people would have been on it. But I know that they're doing like six or seven issues, and they're $20 to $25 each. People just aren't buying them, which is a shame. It's a damn shame.
Yeah.
Next book is Superboy. Superboy currently sells about 45 copies a month. I said 100. I think that people are going to be interested. I personally, reading up what they're doing with the book, reading all this stuff, I'm going to lose interest pretty quick if they don't resolve his origin, because I got to be honest, I am sick and tired of characters. Well, his origin's a mystery that we're going to be resolving over the first. No.
Yeah, you forgot there's one thing that makes it interesting is that you have this brand new hero that appeared and his mysteries in origin, but there's already a super secret government agency trying to kill him.
Yes.
If he's such a big freaking mystery, how do you know enough to kill him?
Supergirl?
I'm not going to do the Superboy just because don't care. Although there was something, it had to have been in Flashpoint where they talked about first they found a skeleton of a dog, and then they said there were a couple more things that had landed. And Superman, as we saw him in Flashpoint, and last time I saw him, he was skedaddling, leaving Flash and Batman behind. So maybe the Superboy and the next book, Supergirl, tie into that somehow. Or not. You know, we'll wait and see, but. Whereas Superboy, I probably am not buying. Supergirl, I am going to buy.
Supergirl, I said the same. It's currently selling about 40 copies in a shop that sells 100 copies of Batman. I said about 100. It's going to be our through character is what I'm hearing, that she's the character who this is all new to her. And the more I read about how they're doing it, the more I'm interested. However, let's remember that one of the reasons we've had a lot of the big changes in the DC universe, kind of taking it back to the Silver Age, I think is a good thing. Dan DiDio said, when you talk to someone on the street who doesn't know anything about comics and you say, who's Supergirl? They go, oh, that's Superman's cousin. Or who's Superboy? Oh, that's Superman when he was a boy. And he asked, when he got in at DC, he asked someone to explain Supergirl's origin. Well, what it is, she's this
plasma matrix.
She's this matrix character from a universe where Superman killed the three Phantom Zone villains because they killed everybody.
That was on the Six Parks theme. He went to one of the Six Flags places and he read that. That's where I remember that story now that you're talking about. Because he looked at me and said, wait a minute, this ain't right. The other question nobody's bothered to ask. Without the incredible art by Michael Turner, will a Hottentot Supergirl sell?
Well, she's wearing pants.
Nope. There, knock 50 off.
Next book is Superman.
Actually, there was one thing about Supergirl I wanted to mention that
okay.
I will be interested in. Having just raised one adolescent girl and having another one just starting adolescence, I will be interested to see if the Supergirl will be the adolescent girl they claim to be. I'd be willing to bet the writer will not get it unless he or she has raised an adolescent girl. But I hope to be pleasantly surprised.
That is one other thing I wanted to bring up. In the new DC universe, I listened to an interview where there is one female creator in these 52 books.
Yeah. And
Gail Simone's only writing one book.
People were talking about that at the con, and the DC was just kind of blowing them off. Who you got someone wants to write? Send it in.
And I could come up with a list of about 15 female artists and writers who would do good work. How about the people who are already working for DC? I take it back. There are two. There's Gail Simone and then Amy Reeder. But in the first 52 books, there is one female creator. Superman number one. Superman currently sells about 70 copies a month. I said 150. Even though it's written and drawn by Perez, I think unless it's a big crossover book, it's not a huge sell. I think Jim Lee sells better than George. Jorge Perez.
Now, there's something I read from a column, or again, from the comic book coverage that Superman takes place in the current day DC universe.
Yes.
He's part of Justice League. Action takes place in the past.
Yep.
What did he say, about 10 years or 5 years or whatever?
However long it is. The other thing is Superman is the first superhero. There was no one before him.
And so that.
So the Golden Age and the Silver Age are gone.
That one will be able to play however they want. And the action, that is. Because as it goes forward, he'll be meeting Batman for the first time. And we'll discover how he gets to be the Superman that's in the Justice League and in Superman. So I thought of the two books. I mean, I was going to pick them up anyways, but I think that might cement me at least trying them out for a while to see where they end up.
One thing I'm reading online, a lot of fans are upset that, well, Superman is going to be, he's an alien disguised as a human, and he's a loner, et cetera.
He's going to be more alien than man.
First thing I want to point out, I will read this from the earliest Superman comics. Who, disguised as Clark Kent, fights a never-ending battle for truth and justice? It's not Clark Kent disguised as Superman. It's Superman disguised as Clark Kent. If you go back and you read the Silver Age stuff, there are tons of stories about Superman feeling alone because he's the last survivor of Krypton. You read a lot of the Silver Age stuff, and even though there's goofiness and silliness, there's a lot of sad undertones where he misses his parents who have passed away, and he misses Krypton. And any chance he has to go back to Krypton, he takes. And let's even go to Alan Moore's classic story, The Man Who Had Everything. What was Superman's fondest desire?
Lois Lane.
To be on Krypton.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that's right.
To be just an average family man on Krypton.
Wasn't that a John Byrne change, though?
Byrne's the one who said, well, you know, he never thinks about Krypton. He sees himself as an Earthling. And I've gone back and I've read Man of Steel. And at the time, I thought it was a good revamp. But the older I get and the more stories I read about Superman, the more I just don't like it. Clark Kent is a braggart. He's not a bully, but he's close. And you don't identify with him. He's a best-selling novelist, and he has a column in the paper. And he's won when he was in high school, he won all these trophies because he was the best athlete. And I don't want that Superman. And they've pretty much gotten rid of that Superman anyway. They've wiped it all away with all these different origins. But I like the idea of the core of Superman. They're getting rid of the marriage, which some people are mad about. But if I've talked about it before, every creative team that's come on since the wedding has said, how can we get rid of the marriage? Mm-hmm. Because it ends the story. The core of Superman is the romantic triangle. Lois loves Superman. Clark loves Lois. Lois doesn't know that Clark and Superman are the same guy.
And we all get a Heineken after work.
And the reader identifies with the, well, if she really knew who I was, she would love me.
I can go without that.
Powerful for kids. That's powerful for kids. Because a lot of kids, you know, especially the nerdy kids, are, you know what? People would like me if they just knew who I really was.
Say, you think we could package babies as Soylent Veal?
Let's move on to Swamp Thing. We're not going to get an adult rating for cannibalism.
That's a book, Swamp Thing, that I may be interested in. It's not one I'm going to get. And really, if I keep being sent around the States, I probably should. But it's one that I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to do with it, because the original Swamp Thing eventually elevated itself to almost godhood, and it went actually beyond Earth. But is this like a brand new thing, start at the beginning, or is it,
is it picking up from Brightest Day?
Yeah, that's exactly where I want to see where they're going with it.
And the thing is, in the Brightest Day Aftermath book, Swamp Thing's more of a villain.
Yeah.
I put 75, higher end of the midline DC stuff.
I don't don't know if I'd necessarily have gone that high. I might have gone a little lower just because, of course, it's hard to say that because you're always, you seem to like to round off in the 75s.
Yeah.
I always remember when I used to order, I would, it would be like, okay, if I had 68 people that ordered this, I would order 20 for the shelf. And the other thing that made this hard is you used to be able to look back at your charts and, you know, like Amazing Spider-Man, you know, you sold, you ordered 100 copies, 75 went to subscribers, 25, and this month you bumped up because Todd McFarlane returned. This month you bumped higher because Steve Ditko came back.
And then wait, Steve Ditko came back?
Because Rob Liefeld came. And so you would adjust it accordingly. Or there might be a crossover. Or there might be, you know, well, villain. Back then it was like, they're going to have both Carnage and Venom? Whoa, we got to bump that baby up. So you could track what sold. But you eventually get a number where it's like, you know what, there's a solid 15 I could sell. So rather put 25 on the shelf, I'll put 15, and you can bump it up or down accordingly. You can't do that with this.
Right.
And that's what I think makes it unfair. I mean, I'm reading some comments by some spudheads about after McFarlane talking about why this is such a bad idea. Not one of these people who are rushing to DC's defense has mentioned how much of a boondoggle this is for a retailer to order. You know, they're all, I mean, you got to go read or listen to what Todd said, because he just says from a publisher standpoint, he doesn't understand how you can do that. He thinks you'd have been better off just doing 5 a month and trying to keep it going. Although the Ultraverse tried it that way, and I thought they were idiots for doing that way back when. So, or maybe you should have just been better off. Todd said there was one thing he agreed with, and I think before we get to the final three, he said you don't want to start off and give them all the A stuff, because then the next month all you got left is the B stuff. And by the time you get to the C stuff, no one's going to be collecting it anymore. I would have liked it had they, like you said, I mean, they can't because of the way they have Action and Superman set up. Hey, guess what? December, Action Comics number one, Superman. October, well, guess what? There's these two other people showed up, Batman, Wonder Woman. And then a couple of these other smaller people. You know, but again, it's just the way they have it set up. I mean, that would be suicide for them to go to Time Warner. Oh, yeah, we're going from 150 books down to one.
Well, here's the thing, though, Joe. They're going from about 35 books to 52.
Yeah. So they're bumping it up. But, I mean, it would have been nice if they're really that gung-ho. They could have just started it over and just done it organically rather than try to shove it down our throats with 52 titles, you know, because obviously the A's will float. The B's, C's, D's might catch on. But I see we'll have to, in a year from now when we revisit this, or it might be just a few months, we'll have to see, you know, which titles made it and which ones were just, they shouldn't have killed a tree for.
Yeah. And the other thing McFarlane, I pulled up the article. I think I still have it up. Yeah. He talks about how, you know, how do I order an upgrade of 52 books when I have a limited budget? We're doing this. We're not talking about budget. Budget-wise, you might be ordering a lot less because you know I have this much money in September. And when you do your order, you look at what sold in the past, but you also have to look at, I have this much money to spend. I need to pull in this much amount of profit in order to keep my doors open. I've also got the Marvel books, which are going to sell this much. Where are you going to cut? Are you going to cut from the indie books? Most stores say already their indie budget is really, really low anyway. Are you going to cut from the stuff behind that? There's not much when it comes to like statues and shirts and things like that. Mostly at your store, you just ordered for people who ordered them. You didn't order statues for the shelf. You ordered statues because somebody ordered them, or you ordered a shirt because somebody ordered it. I don't know where the budgetary stuff for this is going to come from. And we've talked a lot about it where there's no history now. what I've written down is my biggest guess. And yeah, I stuck with round numbers just because it's easier to wrap my head around it. I don't have, and most shops aren't going to have, people who say, I want this book. I would imagine that the DCNU stuff, pre-orders are very low. Because they're probably a lot like me where, well, I don't know what it's going to be. I want to look at it first. We have three books left. Teen Titans is currently selling about 45 copies a month. I put that higher mid-range at 100 copies. It looks interesting. Teen Titans always starts off well. Here's why I'm not interested. Scott Lodell is writing it. Everybody seems to forget that Bob Harris was brought in as editor-in-chief. You know, we talk about Dan DiDio. Dan DiDio is a VP. Jeff Johns is a creative. Bob Harris is the editor-in-chief. So I'm seeing a lot of names from the 90s start to show up at DC. The only reason a Scott Lodell book ever sold is because it was the X-Men. It had nothing to do with him. If you look at the stuff he's done that's not the X-Men, no one cares. So while Teen Titans is probably going to have a good start, I think it's another book that's going to be losing 10, 12, 15% of the readers a month. Voodoo number one. I don't remember Voodoo ever having a series that sold. I remember a couple of miniseries.
Yeah, and she hung out with Wildcats.
Yeah, but is this a character that's going to be able to carry a book?
You know, I might have brought back Wildcats. You know, make that up. Try to make that an A team. You know, that would have been an interesting counterpoint to Justice League. Let them work. Or maybe that's going to happen in the future. You know, once we get introduced to all the other characters. I mean, there's tons of Wildstorm characters that have not made the cut that we, you know, we're assuming they're there, but we don't know yet what's going to happen with them. But Voodoo's got boobs, so.
I said 50.
I'd have to see the artwork.
Yeah. And our last book is Wonder Woman. I said 75 for Wonder Woman number one, because the only time Wonder Woman has ever done really well is when it's got a huge name attached to it. The relaunch by Perez in the 80s did well. Once he left, the book cratered. Byrne came, actually, Wonder Woman is the book that killed Byrne's sales potential. Before that, he had around 40 to 50,000. When he came on a book, there was a 40 to 50,000 reader jump. When he left Wonder Woman, he would go to other books and the books would not jump that much. And now he can't even get work at DC. His last series at DC, Lab Rats, sold like, I think the last issue 8 sold less than 20,000 copies. His Next Men revamp over at IDW is selling less than 10,000 copies. I don't think anybody cares about Wonder Woman. I think the JMS books didn't sell.
You mentioned something earlier where you were saying you don't understand, you know, how a retailer can budget to take care of all these titles. And I'm gonna quote something. Paraphrase on that, again, back to the wisdom of Todd McFarlane, when he was complaining about, and rightly so, not rightly so, it's your decision, but he was saying back in the heyday of Image, he said, it's ridiculous that my book, Spawn, selling as well as it does, sits next to another book, we'll say, look at your spreadsheet, Suicide Squad, which doesn't sell near as much. And that's how a lot of times a retailer is able to order smaller books. The profit he's going to make off of Action, off of Superman, off of Justice League if it publishes, combined with X-Men or Avengers or Captain America, will cover, to an extent, the books that aren't selling as well. That's just the way it is. And a lot of times, Todd brought up a interesting point is that his book is getting the same shelf space that all these other no-name books are getting. To which I would just say, yep, you're right. That's the way it works. You know, if you want to give me extra money or extra display or an extra shelf talker, that I can say, hey, look, Spawn. But even to DC and their 52, I have yet to hear of any extra retailer thing. You know, unless a retailer puts aside a section of his store and says, here's DC's 52, buy them, because I gotta eat this month. I just don't know. It's.
And the other thing about it is comics are one of the few retail areas left where they don't, because there are no chains of any national significance. I went to the grocery store today. Now, the grocery store I went to, it's part of a chain of about 5 or 6 stores here in Minneapolis. And they've got, you know, at the end of the aisle, here's Doritos, here's Campbell's soup, here's Coke, here's this. Those people pay for that space. Doritos comes in and says, either we're going to give you cash money for this space, or we will give you an extra discount for this space, or if you put an ad in your flyer, we will give you this discount and this. They pay for that space. You go to, when you go to check out, one of the reasons you don't see TV Guide anymore at the grocery checkout isn't because they revamped the magazine and it doesn't. It's because it doesn't sell as well. So they don't have the money to pay for that space. Meanwhile, the tabloids pay for that space. The women's magazines pay for that space. You never see Men's Fitness or Car and Driver or Maxim there. You see these women's magazines and you see tabloids because they pay for that space. The Archies, the Archie Digest that you'll see at some places at the grocery store, they pay for that space. Comic shops, the shop does it all themselves. They don't get a co-op. They don't get an extra discount for saying, oh, I'm going to put this book by the register, or I'm going to put this in the window, or I'm going to make this special display, or I'm going to use this special rack for these books. The shop owner pretty much has to do it themselves. And in a lot of cases, I know at Schindler's what they did was whatever they ordered the most of, that got the best display because we got to get rid of these. At your shop, one of the things you would do, a book that you were really excited about, you would put up by the register, you would give a special display. Or the kids' books, we'll put them here because this is where the parents will go. But what it should be is DC comes to the shop and says, and this would have to be a bigger shop, you know, like your big shop, not your small shop. They come in and they go, we would like to have all our 52 books right here. And we're going to give you an extra 5% discount if you do that and leave them there for 2 months. Because that's the way retail works. You go to Target, you see the, you go to the toy aisle and you see, oh, look, here's a racetrack for cars. And you push this button and it lights up and the, this, and you can see the cars moving and everything. Target didn't put that there out of the goodness of their heart. They put that there because they were paid. I keep hearing about DC, oh, we've got this great advertising plan. Well, if I were a shop owner and I have to place my order, I think, what, today is the 24th, I have to place my order within 7 to 9 days, and I haven't heard jack and or shit about what your advertising plan is going to be, I am not going to bump up my DC budget. I will look at how much I spent on DC in June, and I will spend that much in September. And it let the chips fall as they may, and if I have to reorder because I sold out of something, I'll reorder because I sold out of something. But you're not telling me, are you buying ads on Nickelodeon? Are you buying ads on MTV? Are you buying ads on ESPN? Are you running ads on any of the on any of the cable things that Time Warner owns, like TNT, TBS, CNN, anything like that? Are you putting ads in magazines? Are you putting ads in anything? Are you going to buy billboards? Are you going to buy radio ads? Are you going to go to Clear Channel and say, we'd like to buy ads? Are you going to tell me that, okay, I'm going to have these people on the radio. I'm going to give Jeff, I'm going to get Jeff Johns and Dan DiDio on Howard Stern. Or I'm going to get Jeff Johns and Dan DiDio on Jimmy Kimmel or Craig Ferguson. Or I'm going to have Ryan Reynolds as part of his contract to get paid a whole bunch of money to be Green Lantern. He's going to go on the talk shows and talk about what's going on with DC Comics. Hugh Jackman, just because he's a fan, when he was out on the Wolverine publicity tour, talked about Marvel Comics. He did an ad for Free Comic Book Day. It wasn't part of his contract. He just wanted to do it because he's very happy with how Marvel is paying him. Marvel, Jon Favreau, he's directing Cowboys and Aliens, but he directed the Iron Man movies. Whenever he's on Howard Stern, he's talking about the comic books. Same for Robert Downey Jr. Same for all these guys. What's DC doing to push the stuff? Other than, well, we're going to San Diego, and we got ads on comic book resources, and every book got its own page in previews. I don't care. That's your audience already. You're going to piss off part of your audience. They're going to leave. You're going to have the people who, there's no Justice Society, you're erasing everything from Superman back. Boom, I'm done. I don't care. I'm with DC because of the history. That's okay if you bring in people to replace them. I don't see where they're working to bring people in to replace them. You're talking to the people who already buy comics. How long speaking was that of, rant?
Speaking of buying comics, I mentioned last podcast, I actually found a place in town to buy comics.
Really?
Yeah, there's good news and there's bad news.
Oh, tell us the bad news first.
Well, as we speak, Walking Dead number 56 is out on the shelf. At this particular store I'm at, they're at issue number 82. Have you heard of a chain called Hastings Entertainment?
Yes.
That's what I've got.
Oh, you said issue 56 was on the shelf. You mean issue 86.
86, yes.
Because I was like, oh, they're 30 issues behind.
Yeah. Oh, they might as well be. Because I'll be home before anything new gets out. But yeah, I've never seen a Hastings Entertainment before. It's kind of interesting. It's like an amalgamation of used bookstores versus new, used stuff versus new stuff. And, you know, because as I wandered through the videos, and half are used, half are new, all of them way priced high. I did wander through and find a bunch of new Doctor Who toys. I mean, these are really cool. I mean, you're like the way the TARDIS looked with the first Doctor, and then there's the fourth Doctor, and then there's the seventh Doctor. I'm like, I don't have near enough money to buy all this stuff. So I did what everybody did. What really shocked me is that Hastings had back issues. So I was thinking, well, they must have back issues from the newsstand stuff. No, they don't. What it is it's a hodgepodge of stuff, Corey, that I wish you could be with me to dig through, because we're running through stuff that you would probably snap up in a heartbeat. Stuff we've talked about on shows, like all those different adjective animals and things that.
Oh my God.
Black and white bust. I mean, I'll just share here some of the things that I picked up. Apparently, Hastings had an exclusive to Stan Lee's Soldier Zero, which is a book being published by Boom. So I picked up the first five issues for a buck a piece, and I saved $1.99 on each issue.
Woo!
Woo-hoo! For a buck, let's see, Carlton Bullseye with Blood.
Oh, my God.
I know, from the 70s. Actually in a pretty nice shape. Picked up Marvel Classics, The Odyssey. I think it has an interesting Ernie Chan cover.
Yeah.
A couple pieces I'm not sure.
By the way, I know a weird story about the Marvel Classics books. Do we want to get into it?
Sure.
One of the reasons the Marvel Classics books came about is back in the 70s, when you worked for Marvel, you had a, if you were one of the higher creators, you had a contract to produce a certain number of pages every month. So Roy Thomas, let's say his contract said, you will produce 70 pages a month. Or John Buscema, you will produce 50 pages a month, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, after 75, when the market just collapsed, they didn't have enough books for the number of pages that people had contracts for. So one of the things that they did, they started doing these adaptations of classic books, and they were going to try to get them distributed to, like, schools and PXs and things like that. The distribution never really worked, but one of the reasons why, I think they're like 30-some, is they just, okay, you're contracted for 62 pages. You're going to do 17 pages for this book, 17 for this one, and then the rest you're going to do one of these literary adaptations. And they did a lot of those just to end people's contracts. So that's why they're hard to find, because, you know, they weren't really distributed really well. A lot of, you know, classic comics had died, and they were trying to get it distributed outside the normal thing. But I, those things are rare, and I wonder how many of them actually did get to newsstands, because I honestly do not remember any of them.
I happen to know this store has about 5 copies of The Odyssey.
Wow.
It's weird, because this is just like half-price books back home, where people come in and they must drop off their old stuff for credit or cash. Because, I mean, there's all of a sudden I'd run into something and it'd be like 20 of them. Like, they had Mickey Mouse and Friends number 300. They have them all priced $1 a piece, you know. And I'm like, well, for reading, that's not bad, considering I'm not going to be getting any new comics for a while. I picked up an 80-page giant Wonder Woman. This has to be a new one, because originally it was priced like $5.99 or something. A couple Malibu Suns, just because I'm trying to finish the Ultraverse thing. They did have a lot of Ultraverse, but I'm not buying them because I don't know what I'd have. I gotta see if I can have somebody send my book list down. Picked up a Simpson Comics number 3 for $1. Warrior Nun Arela number 3 that had the CD with it.
Wow.
Special CD edition. I sold mine on eBay for $20. So I'm like, well, maybe I'll listen to the CD this time. Then I picked up a preview copy from the San Diego Comic Con, which will probably be the only thing I'll pick up from the con this year. Normally I celebrate the Comic Con by buying whatever goodies I can scab off of eBay. But this year I didn't see much anything that I really cared to. You know, there's variant covers, there's some unique toys and things like that. But so other than, I probably will stop back at Hastings. I think you would probably love it, just digging through the old and obscure DVD titles they've got. You know, they've got them like anywhere from $1 to whatever, and they're all bookshelves, so they're really hard to see, but they are alphabetical. So, you know, I kind of hit and missed on a few. I was looking to see I needed a replacement copy of Weird Al Yankovic's UHF because mine busted. Didn't find it. I looked to see if they had that, what is it, the Ultimate Watchmen, where everything's in one package?
Yes.
Didn't have that. I did find a copy of Caveman, though, which is a Ringo Starr show that my dad really loves that we watch every Christmas. I don't know if he has it on DVD, but it was brand new for $20. And I'm like, you know, I'm pretty sure I could find that on Amazon or eBay for less. I just picked up a copy of Beetlejuice for my daughter, and I think I paid $6 for it on eBay, and that's with shipping. So I'm going to be cheap.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason
when I buy DVDs. Yeah, here's the thing. I keep hearing, oh, DVD sales are in the toilet. DVD sales are in the toilet. Well, that's part of it. But also, why am I going to buy something for 20? What was it? There was a movie. Oh, Scott Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. I was going to buy Scott Pilgrim when it came out, but I wasn't I was only working part-time, so I said, oh, I'll wait. Now, I think it was either last week or the week before, Best Buy had the exact same copy that was $25 less than a year ago. I could have picked it up for $3.99.
Yeah.
That's... Why should I buy anything when it comes out if they're going to cut it to that cost after it's on cable?
And 90% of the things I just want to watch once.
Yeah.
There's a big hubbub going on about Netflix, how they detach their DVD rentals from their online streaming.
Yeah, from the streaming.
And, you know, I talked to my wife about it, and she said, fine, we'll cancel the DVDs thing, because she's had a DVD from them for 3 months and hadn't watched it. But yep. They almost nightly watch stuff on the stream. They actually had it where, I think as I was leaving, my kids were rewatching Ren and Stimpy, which is kind of funny because I have the stuff that John Kay did. I never bought anything beyond that. But now I can watch, apparently he came back later and did some stuff for them towards the tail run. And now I can watch those online if I want. I don't have to buy volumes 3 and 4 just to get those.
Yep.
So that seems
what happened was when Spike Network changed from TNN to Spike, they wanted to have an animation block. And here's the comic book connection. One of them was Stripperella by Stan Lee, and they were going to do Ren and Stimpy. And remember why Crickafalusi was supposedly fired from Ren and Stimpy, Joe? Do you remember the reason Nickelodeon gave?
He was slow and belligerent about it.
Well, so Spike TV said, all is forgiven. We want you back. Here's a contract. And I forget how many episodes. I'm going to guess it was 13. He delivered 6. All of them were late. One took a year to get delivered. And the show was canceled.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I think I watched one of the new ones that he had delivered, and after watching it, I was like, you know, when Ren and Stimpy came out, it was groundbreaking. It's like when the original X-Men cartoon came out that our bud Dan Wiesemeyer worked on. Groundbreaking. But you go back and you look at it, and my wife was watching Ren and Stimpy with us, and she goes, you know, is this where they got some of the stuff from SpongeBob SquarePants from?
Yeah.
You mean this shot of the gross close-ups? Yeah. Or things that just randomly go nowhere? So when they came out, I remember watching the first Ren and Stimpy's before we bought the shop, and I literally, it was an hour where I just laughed and cried the hardest I think I have in years, because it was so hilarious watching, again, the original Ren and Stimpy's. And now you go back and they're still fun and the kids are having fun with them, but, you know, it all builds on it. And it's just like watching the original X-Men cartoons. You know, you watch them now and they're hokey, the animation's bad, but it was groundbreaking to actually see the characters moving. And quite a lot of fun.
And they looked like they did in the comic, too. They mm-hmm. used the current design of the costumes and everything, which is why it looks so painfully dated.
And why you can probably buy them now on DVD cheap.
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, kids, you've wasted more than an hour.
Yeah, we did the two two-part shows where they were both more than an hour.
Let's put it this way, Joe. We have recorded 2 hours and 47 minutes. This may be 3 episodes.
Oh, you know what? We need to figure out some sponsors. Like, did we even mention who sponsored this particular podcast?
No, we didn't. Believe it or not, kids, this here show has sponsors. I'm going to run through them real fast. Sponsor number one is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best web host in the whole known universe. And if you go to DreamHost.com, sign up for a web page, use the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year. That's right, $20 off your first year. That's why they are one of the best web hosts in the world. That's why you should use them for a website. Our other sponsor is Worldwide News at worldwidenews.solitairerose.com, part of the Solitaire Rose family of websites. Worldwide News is the story of the lowest-rated cable news network and the people who work there. Written by me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard, and drawn by Dainty Dan Moore. He calls himself Deadly Dan Moore, but he has yet to show up on this here podcast. And until he does, he will be Dainty Dan Moore. Our final sponsor sponsors Tales from the Shop, which really the whole episode was a tale from the shop. But our final sponsor is Chris B., and you can find out more about Chris B. at her website, broomhildamusic.com, where you can buy her CD, you can sign up for her mailing list, you can see what she's up to. She's a fantabulous artist, and she is also the creator of the Tales from the Shop theme song, which we currently have a contest. If you send us lyrics for Tales from the Shop, the theme song, you will win a fabulous prize, which I have selected. So send those entries in. Let us know what you think. And remember that the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most.